Thank you for listening to KPOO San Francisco, 89.5.
Hello, fellow space travelers. You're listening to 89.5 FM, KPOO San Francisco. We're doing a very special show today. It is Share the Night Sky. Share the Night Sky is in conjunction with Wonderfest, which is hosting a great big science festival. We're going to be talking with a fabulous local astronomer. And in fact, we've got him on the line right now. So let's just welcome him. Hello, Paul Salazar.
Hello, Marilyn. It's good to be on board, and I'm looking forward to spending some time with you and your listeners to get acquainted with the night sky tonight.
So, how long have you been an astronomer?
It's a lifelong thing. Like a lot of people, when I was quite young, I was struck by the beauty of looking up at the sky and looking through a telescope to see things like the moon and planets. And from age 9 or 10 up until now, it's always been there, sometimes more involved and more intense, sometimes less. But I really have just found that the skies are such a beautiful thing to look at, and there's so much to discover, and it's a lot of fun to share with other people, too.
Well, how are we going to share the sky tonight?
Well, here's the plan. What we want to have all of our listeners doing tonight is doing this interactively by actually going outside and looking up into the night sky. And the way we would encourage you to do that is you've got the radio on now, you've got us tuned in, hopefully you can get us on a stream on a mobile device. Mm-hmm. So what we want you to do now is to take the next few minutes to put on your earbuds, get yourself situated with your device so you can keep streaming and you can go outside. And look for a good spot near your home, near your work, wherever you might be right now, where you're going to have a view of the sky around you. And in a few minutes, I'll start a little sky tour. But let's give everyone a couple minutes right now first to put on a jacket, get outside, and find a spot where they can enjoy some night sky, but the real sky. We're not going to just pretend like we're looking at it. We're going to go out and look at it for real.
Excellent. And for you people who are planning on doing that, bundle up because it's a little bit chilly. Also, too, if you have a streaming device, sometimes when you go outside, you briefly lose the stream. That happens. It does. Just re-log back into whatever it is you're doing. Also, for those listeners who are on Chrome, we understand that some people have some difficulties with the stream, so you can go to our website and find out how to eliminate those issues. But you can also hear us on TuneIn, on iTunes, you can go to our website, kpoo.com, and click on the stream there. So, Paul, tell us a little bit about how we're going to orient ourselves once we're outside.
Sure. You know, back to the getting set up, you know, do put on something warm. Mm-hmm. People often will walk outside from their homes at night to look at, you know, and they're going to go with me to look at stars, and they'll say, oh, it's not so bad tonight. And you'll walk outside for a moment, and you'll think, well, I was just inside. Get outside. It feels kind of nice. What does happen after about 20 minutes of staring up at the sky is people start getting cold. And after about 30 minutes, they're getting uncomfortable and so on. So my first tip real quick is if you're going to take part in our little journey tonight, then do, you know, put on something warm. And even for a lot of people, put on a little hat, something to really keep yourself comfortable. Because what we might be used to is walking outside in the evening or at night and you're moving and all that and you stay warm. But if you stop to look at stars, believe me, I've had enough experience with this. You will start to cool off after a few minutes, and then it's just no more fun. So it will be a better experience for anyone who wants to take part to just put on a few, you know, a layer or two. I encourage you to do that because, look, I just know it's going to be more pleasant and a much more fun experience.
Okay.
The next thing, Marilyn, is that you want to get people to really look for a spot where there's two things working to their advantage. To see the night sky and for like, I'm doing this for people in the city, right? We all know that if you live in a big city, there's lots of light pollution, and we can't stop the light pollution that's up above us. It's already there. You know, it's because if you live in San Francisco or the Bay Area, or if people are listening in Southern California, they're going to have that challenge. So your job when you go outside to do some stargazing is to eliminate what you can control. And what you can control are things like streetlights, ambient light. You know, if you're in a backyard, the backyard lights or the lights inside of your home that you could switch off. And every little thing you can do like that is going to help. And that's going to help you because it's going to allow your eyes to start adapting to the darkness. So we want people to, if you have a shot at this right now, if you're going to want to look at the stars tonight or any night, one of my most important tips is to find a spot where you have the least possible ambient light around you, you know, and if you're in a backyard and there's a street light over somewhere nearby and you can put a tree in the way, so to speak, right? You can lay on the grass where the tree blocks that street light. It helps. If you're in the shadow of the tree and now it's just a touch darker, you will in fact be able to see more stars because you're helping your eyes to be able to adapt to the darkness a bit better, and that's what you need. So that's going to be one of the big things to think about if someone's walking outside right now listening to us, is to look around in all directions and ask yourself, is this the darkest spot I can find, or is if I walk for 5 minutes, will I get to a bit darker? Then the other thing you want to think about is a spot that's got a view, obviously. Like if you live near a hill and there's a hilltop that you can walk up to, that's perfect. Or if there's a park nearby with a lot of open space and not too many tall, tall trees, that's going to help. So you just want to give yourself a view in as many directions as you can. Now, the reality is if we live in a city, you're never going to have the perfect spot, right? The perfect spot might be to drive for 3 or 4 hours to the desert or to the mountains and try to get a better view. So for all of us city dwellers, you have to do the best you can with what you've got. So try to find that open space and really work hard to get away from street lights and other lights.
All right. So, Paul, how long have you been sharing the night sky with people?
Decades, to be honest, yes. I had been a member of the San Francisco Amateur Astronomy Club for a long time, and one of the most exciting parts about that is astronomy clubs love to put together what we call star parties. And what that means is you have a, you know, you publicize that you're going to meet somewhere. In the case of the Amateur Astronomy Club, it's up on Mount Cam. And if you're doing that, then you're going to be able to set up telescopes in an open space, hopefully where it's reasonably dark, and you host the public, and everyone can get together, and you stand outside as a group, and you look up at the sky. That's it, right? And in doing events like that, it just opens the doors for people to come out and look up. And I have been always so caught up in these events. They're so beautiful because when a group of people gather under the night sky, then they start looking up at the stars and at the planets. You just have a really great moment of connection. And it is such something that has affected me so strongly that I've always encouraged myself and encouraged others. You know, if we can get out together under the night sky, even as a small group or in a big public event, to do that, because it takes you away from the TV, it takes you away from all the problems of the world that we have right now, and it allows you to just have a bigger picture and a deeper connection.
Okay, so when we look at the night sky, how similar is it to the sky that people saw, let's say, 100 years ago or 1,000 years ago?
It's virtually unchanged. Isn't that amazing? It is fundamentally, you know, the night sky as we perceive it today would be the same one that Galileo looked up and saw 400 years ago when he was making such profound discoveries about Jupiter and the Sun and Venus, and would be the same ones that the Greeks were looking at and the, you know, the Persians when they were naming constellations 2,000 and 3,000 years ago. So fundamentally, extremely little has changed.
Okay, so given that we're probably looking at the same sky that people from thousands of years ago we're looking at, are there any notable absences or additions to the sky?
Good question. You know, so they're notable, you said, right? And I'll tell you this, if you or I just go outside with, you know, without any telescopes or binoculars and we just look up, it's extremely unlikely we would be able to see those differences. There have been things like what are called supernovae, which is where a star explodes. So there was a star there today, and tomorrow it's vanished, right? We're not going to spot that. I mean, you'd have to be a real expert to be able to figure that out. But I would say that the biggest difference you and I would see today compared to those ancient astronomers and all is that we actually are looking up at a lot of satellites, too. So we have a lot of if you will, human-produced stars that are now drifting around the sky at night. And when you look up at a satellite, you might not realize it's a satellite. It's not a UFO, that's for sure. They're just out there, things that we put into orbit around the Earth. And when they fly over the part of where you are, so if a space station, for example, was to fly over the Bay Area right now and we look outside, you would know it. You would see a big bright light. You know, it looked like a very bright star moving slowly across the sky. And that's, of course, human-produced, right? So it's not as if the ancients would have seen that. And they do have an effect. In fact, that's a slight problem these days because Elon Musk and SpaceX have been launching a lot of these little micro-satellites that they're putting into orbit, the Starlink satellites that are going to be providing internet around the planet, which is an interesting technological advance, but it actually does put a little bit of extra light pollution into the sky. It's very nuanced and subtle, but if, for example, you're an astrophotographer, if you took pictures of the night sky as a hobby, when those things come flying by, maybe you and I don't see them very brightly, but a camera pointing with a telescope at the sky trying to take a picture of a galaxy, it could ruin your whole experience. And for the professional astronomers that are doing research, those Starlink satellites can get in the way as well. So it is a very new and very real challenge for people who enjoy the night sky, whether you're just doing it for fun or doing it for research. And that would be the single biggest difference in how we see the sky today.
Okay. So, Paul Salazar, I'm guessing that most of our listeners have donned their apparel to go outside and have found a comfortable place to sit down and view the sky. So, in order for us to all be looking at the same thing, how should we orient ourselves?
Well, so we're going to start the adventure tonight by looking to the south-southwest, and the way you're going to find that is to look for the moon, because tonight we have a nearly first quarter moon shining in the sky. It's reasonably high up right now, and the moon, of course, is so easy to spot. Everyone can find that, and so you're just going to have to look to where you have a good southern horizon. So I guess I should have mentioned this 10 minutes ago, but in any case, right now the goal here is to ensure that looking to the south, a little to the southwest right now, is our moon. So the moon is such an easy thing to spot. It's above the horizon, and it is going to be pretty obvious. It's called nearly first quarter, which means it's not quite a half-lit, half-dark moon. It's just a little shade before that right now. And that's going to be our first landmark. If we can find that, then we're going to use that to help us to find everything else in the sky tonight. So all listeners, or if you're trying to pay attention to this now, or if you're going to go out, let's say, later after the show or tomorrow night, today and tomorrow, the moon at this time of night is going to be pretty much to the south. And the fun thing tonight is the moon is right next to two very interesting planets. One of them quite bright. That's Jupiter, the biggest planet in the solar system. And then just to the upper left is Saturn. Not quite as bright, but much brighter than a lot of the stars around it, and bright enough to be seen even with the light of the moon right there. And they're forming a bit of a triangle this evening. So the first challenge for everyone is to discover the moon and these two lovely objects, Jupiter and Saturn, right next to them.
Okay. Okay.
And, in fact, those two objects are, of course, all part of our solar system. So when people are looking up at that right now, you're looking up at our moon, which, of course, is very close to Earth compared to everything else in the night sky. It's our closest neighbor. Mm-hmm. And then you're looking basically out into the solar system at two of our biggest planets, and the three of them are very close together, and there's a reason for that. So let's take a minute, Marilyn, to try to figure out what's going on in the sky right now.
Okay.
What happens is, when we look into the sky, of course, there are stars in every direction. But the moon and the planets don't go everywhere in the sky. They go into very special places, and they follow a very limited, a very narrow band across the sky. And that's because, you know, we've all seen pictures in school when you learned about the planets and the solar system. You know, you kind of, people draw them on a sheet of paper. You put the sun in the middle, and the Earth's going around that, and Jupiter and Mars and Saturn. And then you put the moon going around the Earth. And, you know, everything is in this flat plane. And that, in fact, is really how they are. Mm-hmm. When we look up tonight and we're looking at Saturn and Jupiter and the moon, they're all lined up because we're looking into the edge of our solar system. And so the next thing to look for, I want to invite everyone to now look to your left. So if you're now, we're facing south, mm-hmm. and you see the moon and Jupiter and Saturn, and now you turn your head and you look to the left, off to that part of the sky, over to what would be the east, will be a bright orange-red dot, a star, what looks like a star.
Okay.
But it's not. It's a planet. It's Mars. So when you're looking now to the east, you're going to see another member of our solar system, another planet. And it's so orange-red. It's so distinctive. And it's very bright this time of year right now, that I don't think any of our listeners will have any problem finding it as long as they have a clear view looking toward the east.
Okay. Now, how did the people... How did they know in the past, how were they able to figure out that those were planets and not stars?
That is a great question. Yeah. Let's go way back in time.
Okay.
Before there were telescopes. You know, once you had telescopes, it was very easy to look up at these objects and quickly determine that they're not stars, that they're planets, that they're much closer, they're bigger. Because if you look at these objects, Saturn, Jupiter, and now over to the left, Mars, through a telescope or even just through binoculars, you will notice right away, compared to the background stars, that these objects are not little pinpricks of light. So stars are so far away that they just, even with the best telescope, even with the best telescopes we have anywhere on Earth or even in space, you can't point a telescope at a star and see a little round circle like the sun, mm-hmm. okay? All you can see is just a little speck of light because they are so extraordinarily distant. The distance is mind-boggling how far away they are. And yet we can see them in the night sky. But the planets, by comparison to a star, are very much, much, much closer. And they're big, you know, round balls being illuminated by our own sun. So when you look at them through a telescope, from the point of Galileo on, so 400 years ago, it would be really obvious if you point a telescope at these that you'd say, well, look, there's a little round circle. Mm-hmm. Or the better the telescope, you start to see more detail and more of the beautiful imagery that you can see if it's Jupiter with the beautiful cloud bands, and Saturn with the rings, and Mars with all of its lovely color. They're very round, and they're very much a round dot. Mm-hmm. And the stars are just little pinpricks. So that's the easy thing if you have a telescope. But before there were telescopes, the ancient astronomers very quickly learned that the planets, if you look out night after night after night, that they move, that they're not stationary. So if you're looking tonight over at Jupiter and Saturn, And if you learn a few things about some of the stars in the sky, you would notice that to the lower right of Jupiter and Saturn tonight are some other bright stars that form a constellation, and that constellation is Sagittarius. It's just one of the zodiac signs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you would be looking at the night sky, and you would have looked at it maybe 6 months ago, and then 3 months ago, and then tonight, and then next week, and you would say to yourself, well, the stars in Sagittarius have all formed that little pattern for a very long time, but that bright thing next to it, Jupiter, if I look at it night after night after night, I'm detecting and I can see with my own eyes that it's slowly drifting to the left. It's slowly moving away. So planets, the word planet means wanderer. And the planets were able to, people were able to determine that they were not like other stars because they were in fact moving from night to night. It's very nuanced. And if you just look up at a glance one night and the next night, you wouldn't know the difference. You have to really be paying attention to the background stars. But there's another piece of this, Marilyn. Here's how it gets even more interesting. You know, people who have a zodiac sign, you know, if you were born in December, you would say, well, I'm Sagittarius.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And what that means is that I've got, there's a constellation in the sky that represents me. Like tonight, we would say the moon is just moved from Sagittarius, and it's moving on its way to Capricorn.
Okay.
So all of those zodiac constellations are real constellations in the night sky, and the planets and our moon move through them every year, every month, and every year. They're slowly on a journey around the night sky, and they're moving against the backdrop of those 12 zodiac constellations. That's why those 12 zodiac signs are so interesting, because in the night sky, they're really there. They're real constellations, and each of them are the host to Mars or to the other planets from month to month and year to year.
So when they were naming the constellations, were they actually able to see these pictures in the sky, or were they just sort of naming them? Because when I look in the sky, I see a few stars here and there, and I don't see how they were able to extrapolate from that, oh, that's an Archer, or oh, that's Orion.
Yes, I'm with you on that. Yeah, you've got a great question. Many of the constellations, let me restate that. Most of the constellations in the night sky as we define them, in fact, don't look as much like the real thing as we might want it to hear. You know, there are certain ones, I don't know, let's take some examples here. You know, the Mars tonight is in Pisces, you know?
Okay.
And Pisces is two fish. And in the sky, all you have are a few stars in this spot and a few more over there, and they kind of look like two lines. You'd have to be very creative to see two fish up there, to be honest, right?
Mm-hmm.
And furthermore, they're quite faint. A lot of these you know, famous zodiac signs, Aries, I'm sorry to disappoint anyone who's Aries, but those are just really hard to find, those couple of stars that form that. And I don't see a ram, that's for sure. All I see are a couple of bright stars kind of near each other, right? You might think two of them as eyes.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is there are a handful of constellations that are really good, and they really do look like the thing they're supposed to look like, right?
Okay.
So for example, one of them is straight overhead right now tonight. So if people are out now and you were to look, literally just bend your neck straight back, or if you're in a spot where you can lie on the grass or you can lie on the ground, and you were to look absolutely straight up overhead, you're going to find not just one, not just two, but three very bright stars up in the sky that form a triangle, and each of those stars are the brightest stars in a different constellation. One of them is called Cygnus the Swan, which starts to look like a swan. It really has a little bit of that look. The second one is the constellation Lyra, which is a harp, a lyre.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a little shape, and you can start to make that out. The third one is Aquila, which is an eagle. And if you have dark conditions and you can see all the stars in Aquila, then you're going to see this bird shape in the sky. So those three that are straight above right now are not bad. And as the year winds on and from season to season, there's always going to be a few. I'm not going to say many, but literally two or three or four constellations where you're going to look up and you're going to see more of a pattern.
Okay.
But your question is good, Marilyn. A lot of them just, you know, they're just a couple of specks of light. And quite frankly, especially if you live in a big city where you don't see all the faint stars, then you just have no chance to see that shape.
Okay. I'm staring at a virtual sky. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to 89.5 FM, KPOO, San Francisco. Paul Salazar is sharing the night sky with us. If you head outdoors, you'll be able to orient yourself via the moon. And the moon is in the southeast, I believe.
Slightly to the south and a little bit southwest tonight.
Southwest. All right. So what more can you tell us about this beautiful sky that we're staring into?
Well, there's more to it. So let's start looking around a little bit. So if everyone had a chance to follow along and you've looked to the south and you spotted the moon and Jupiter and Saturn, by the time we're doing this right now, the moon and Jupiter and Saturn are slowly moving toward the southwest, and they're going to set in another couple of hours, hour and a half, 2 hours. But that part of the sky off to the right there, the thing that I mentioned a few moments ago, to the right of that grouping, that little triangle, is the constellation Sagittarius. And Sagittarius is a pretty interesting constellation for a couple of reasons, Marilyn. Mm-hmm. One of them is it is in the zodiac. It's one of the 12 signs. And therefore, the planets and the moon do move through it all the time. The second is the shape is you know, the Sagittarius is, I believe it's a centaur. It's kind of a half man, half horse mythical figure, which is interesting. But what you actually see when you look in that grouping of stars, and you'll see tonight if you have a good horizon to the southwest, if you have a clear view, is it looks like a teapot. It really does. It really does look like a little teapot. It's got a little triangle at the top, which would be the lid.
Mm-hmm.
And off to the right, it's got another little triangle, which is the spout. And over on the left, it's a grouping of four stars that look like the handle, where you would pick up the teapot. And so right now, literally in this time of night, if you can find it, it looks like you're pouring the tea out of the pot right now. It's kind of leaning down to the right.
Yes.
As if you were pouring it out. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes. I am looking at it.
And then here's the bonus. This is the bonus. So now we, you know, people who live in big cities don't often get to see the Milky Way. So the Milky Way, of course, is our own galaxy. And if you've been out into the really dark skies and you've had a chance to see extremely dark conditions, then you'll have spotted the Milky Way. It's this glowing band of light across the sky. That is, in fact, our own galaxy. We're looking into it. We're looking edge on, right, into our own galaxy when we look at the Milky Way. And in a big city, sadly, most of that beautiful band of light is washed out. But I've been, 10 miles away from San Francisco on Mount Tam,
mm-hmm.
and there you can see the Milky Way loud and clear. And for listeners who might be just a little bit outside the city in the East Bay, maybe in the South Bay, where you have enough darkness out by the coast, then you can begin to see. You're not going to see it nearly as beautifully as you would in the darkness if you're in the desert or the mountains. But you can begin to see a little glow. And right there where Sagittarius is, right there where that teapot is pouring out,
mm-hmm.
imagine it pouring out into the heart of the Milky Way, because that's exactly what's happening, right? That part of the sky, that part of the night sky, which right now starts at the southwest, and flows in a band straight up overhead. I just mentioned those three bright constellations straight up overhead. If you were to draw a line, kind of point your finger at the horizon at Sagittarius and then move your hand up straight over your head, you would be pointing at the band of the Milky Way. So even if tonight it's not super visible because you live in a city,
mm-hmm.
so what? You know that that's the direction of the night, of the Milky Way. And here's a bonus for the advanced viewers who want to try this on their own,
mm-hmm.
is take out your binoculars if you have them, or a telescope if you maybe have it in the closet somewhere and you haven't taken it out for a while, and try to set it up and look at the moon, look at Jupiter, look at Saturn, you can also just take like binoculars and you can point them at that point where Sagittarius is. And then if you just start moving those binoculars slowly, slowly, straight up overhead, very slowly, and you just look carefully into that darkness through the binoculars, you're going to start to see the Milky Way and all the different objects in it. Again, it's not going to be as brilliant as if you were in the mountains. But so what? Do it now. Try it out. You can get this anywhere, anytime, just by trying. As long as you get yourself in a moderately dark spot, those binoculars or that telescope will be so much better at finding these fainter objects. And they're there. You just have to point. and that is a fun discovery. So I just want to make sure that everyone tries that out. And if you don't do it right now, maybe you can do it tomorrow night. But that is a spectacular part of the night sky. And it's so rich with little beautiful clusters of stars and nebulae and things that you would never know are there until you take a minute and you look deeply into that part of the sky.
Now, if you're in a different part of the planet, would you not be able to see the Milky Way, or can you see it from all parts of the planet?
That's a really interesting question. So the answer is it depends, right? We in the Bay Area, we live at a latitude, you know, the latitude on Earth. How far north are we from the equator? We live at 38 degrees north, approximately.
Okay.
So what does that mean? It's, you know, 90 degrees is the North Pole and 0 degrees is the equator. So we're a little bit above a third of the way from the equator to the North Pole. And we're in what's called the Northern Hemisphere. Mm-hmm. So being in the Northern Hemisphere, and if you're in New York, you're in the Northern Hemisphere. And if you're in Japan or China or in Europe, that's all above the equator, all the Northern Hemisphere. All of us will have nearly the same night sky.
Okay.
So every 24 hours, as we all spin around on the big ball called Earth, we're going to be looking up into the same patch of stars. So what you're seeing right now, someone in Germany would have seen 9 hours ago, and it would have looked nearly the same.
Okay.
And someone in Japan will be seeing 7 hours from now, and it'll look pretty much the same. And so we're all, as long as we're all above the equator, and kind of in the 30 degrees, 40 degrees, 50 degrees north, then we're going to see the sky pretty similarly. If you get way to the north, like up to Alaska, or way to the south, like Hawaii, the sky will be a little bit different, but let's call it sort of 80% the same.
Okay.
When things get really crazy, though, is when you travel south of the equator. So for anyone who's ever traveled to, let's say, South America or South Africa or Australia or New Zealand, there the sky is dramatically different, Marilyn. And some of the things we're seeing tonight, we're focused so far on the moon and on things along the zodiac, like where Mars is. Mm-hmm. Those will all still be there. But when I asked everyone to look straight overhead at the trio of constellations, what we call the summer triangle, that's largely not visible, for example, from the southern hemisphere.
Okay. Is that just the positioning of the planet that blocks it out?
Yeah, let's take the extreme scenario. Imagine if you were standing on the North Pole. Okay. It'd be a little hard to be there right now, but just pretend.
Mm-hmm.
If you and I were both standing up at the North Pole, you know? If we look straight above our heads, we'd have the North Star. Okay, because
mm-hmm.
it's right on top of the Earth, so to speak. It's out in space, right? But it's mm-hmm. we can see it from there. And now pretend like we started walking from the North Pole, right,
mm-hmm.
south, and we walk across Alaska, and we walk across Washington and Oregon and California and down to Mexico. And as we're walking around the curve of the Earth toward the equator, that North Star that used to be straight over our heads is going to be getting lower and lower and lower on the horizon, because the curve of the Earth is getting in the way. And then when we get to the equator, it's going to be setting. And if we walk south of the equator, it's gone. We can't see it. We can't see around the edge of the Earth to where the North Star is anymore. So there are different stars, however, that we started to see as we walk to the south that are around the curve of the Earth to the south that we can't see from the Bay Area, for example, but you can see if you're in the southern hemisphere. So when you're down there, so to speak, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you look down, if you will, then you're seeing other stars that we in Northern Hemisphere in the Bay Area just can't see. So there are some beautiful stars. You've heard of something called the Southern Cross, perhaps? That's a famous constellation from the south. And that's not at all visible where we live in the Bay Area. So it's just one of those things where you have to physically travel around the curve of the Earth, around the planet, to the south if you want to see some of those southern constellations. And the folks that live there will never see some of the things, like we have the Big Dipper in the northern sky. They can't see that in the southern hemisphere. So there's just, it's just physically because you're around the different parts of the Earth. But if you stay on the north, since we do turn in a circle, you know, around the equator, so to speak, then we all of us in the northern hemisphere get to see the same sky just at different times of the day.
Okay. Now, I'm realizing that I keep asking questions and keep distracting you from showing the night sky to our listening audience. So let me just let you run with it.
Great. Well, let's go back to those stars that were overhead. You know, so anyone who's had a chance to take note of the constellations directly overhead, let me draw your attention to this very unique grouping that we have up in the sky there tonight. And those are the three. There's one star directly straight up, and there's two that are nearby that form a triangle. And it's not what's called an equilateral triangle. It's not three equal sides. It's what's called a right triangle, okay, to be precise for the mathematicians among you. And it's formed from three bright stars. One star is called Vega. The second star is called Altair. And the third star is called Deneb. And those three fairly bright stars are three of the brightest stars in the entire night sky. And tonight they form this beautiful, they always form this beautiful triangle pattern, which is broadly, for astronomy people, called the summer triangle. So even though it's fall, the summer triangle is still pretty high up, and it's going to dominate that part of the sky. And over the next 3 or 4 hours, it's going to slowly move down and be setting toward the west. In fact, of those three stars, the brightest of the three is called Vega. And it is very obvious. It's the brightest. It's a very bright blue-white star, mostly white with a little bit of color. And it's a little bit now not straight overhead, but a little bit more to the west. And that's one corner of the triangle. And then another corner of the triangle that's nearly straight overhead is called Deneb. It's a star as well. And it's actually a very rich blue color. And then the third of the three, which is off to the side, it's a little bit more to the south, is called Altair. And that one is actually a little bit of a white-yellow star, similar to our own sun. So those three stars that form that triangle are, as I mentioned, three of the brightest stars in the night sky. And each one of those stars is the brightest star in its own constellation. Mm. So in fact, I mentioned Deneb is in what's called Cygnus the Swan. And Vega is in the lyre, the harp. And Altair is in Aquila, which is the eagle. So, in fact, if you can find that triangle, and I can assure you, even in the middle of the brightest city night lights, I've done this in New York City, I've done this in other cities in the world, you can find those three stars. They are so bright. And they form a beautiful pattern that dominates the sky from the summer into the fall. And those three will guide you to these three unique constellations. And back to patterns, that one we call Cygnus, the Swan, is also sometimes called the Northern Cross. Mm. So if you're lying down looking up at the sky right now, straight overhead, where that star Deneb is, the bluish one, it is kind of the tip of the cross, and it's a very clear T-shape, you know, cross shape. You know, it's got 1, 2, 3, 4 stars that make up the main body, which ends at Deneb. And then across the second star, there's one to the left and one to the right. And those six stars form the basic cross shape, which, by the way, is also the swan. Right? That's the swan shape as well. It's a long, skinny body with two wings sticking out to the sides. So that would be one of your go-to constellations in the summer and in the fall, because it's made up of moderately bright stars, and it's visible easily even in a city setting. And the three stars together, Deneb, Vega, and Altair, that form the summer triangle, they're just easy to spot. And for the next several hours, and for most fall evenings, they're going to be dominating the sky above at sunset. And then they'd slowly drift down to the west and set several hours later.
Okay.
And there's a bonus. Remember, a few minutes ago, I was talking with you about the Milky Way and how to see that. And remember, starting at the southwest spot where Sagittarius is, almost where the Moon and Jupiter and Saturn are tonight, if you just, you know, I really want to encourage people, if you have a telescope or if you have binoculars, just to get them out tonight or tomorrow night or whatever, and you just lazily move along that pathway from where those stars are in the southwest, where Sagittarius, the teapot, is, and you work your way up toward this summer triangle, and you're looking into some of the most gorgeous parts of the night sky, the richest parts. But also, it's nuanced, Marilyn. You know, you're not going to look in there and you're gonna see pictures that look like they were taken from the Hubble Space Telescope. You know, a lot of people expect that they're going to look through their binoculars or a telescope and see a galaxy so magnificent, or, you know, lots of colors, and it's going to be vivid. It isn't. The real night sky with your own eyes is a little bit black and white, and it's just obligates you to be more patient, and it obligates you to be more thoughtful, and just to take your time to really take in for what you can see. But you've got to take a deep breath, slow down, and just savor the moment. You can't speed through this kind of a thing.
So tell me a little bit about Orion's Belt.
Orion the Hunter. So, you know, we've looked now, you know, straight up, we found the northern, the summer triangle, which is going to be setting over the next few hours. And if you're a committed viewer and you're going to stay up a little bit late tonight, then what will be rising up over the next few hours will be Orion, which is a very stunning constellation. But if you don't want to wait up to late tonight to see it, all you have to do is wait a few months, and it will arrive. So the stars as we see them tonight, I've referred to them a bit as the sort of the summer and fall skies for a reason, because when it's September and October and November, and you look outside at the same time every night, you're going to see roughly the same groupings of stars. But everything in the night sky, from one night to the next, from one month to the next, from one season to the next, seems to drift from the east to the west. So really, it's not the night sky moving, of course. As we all know, it's the Earth moving around the sun that's causing the things to change very gradually over the course of a year. So if you wait until December, January, February time frame, then in the evening, around this time, you're going to see Orion, which is a spectacular combination of stars made up of what you just said, that the belt is very famous, the three bright stars that make up the belt of Orion. And then some of the most fantastic stars in the entire night sky are around the outer parts, if you will, of the constellation that form the body, the shoulders and the kneecaps, if you will, of Orion the Hunter. A very beautiful red giant star called Betelgeuse, and an extraordinary blue-white giant, supergiant star called Rigel. And those are all in and near that belt of Orion. And then if it gets really exciting, because even with just binoculars, you point them up at Orion in the wintertime, you find that belt, and just below the belt is the Orion Nebula, which is the most brilliant nebula in the entire night sky. Very easy to spot. You can almost see it just with the naked eye on a dark night. Mm. But if you look through binoculars or telescope, you're going to see it even more vividly. And that is just a spectacular sight. So that comes up. You have to stay up late tonight, or you wait until it's winter, and then it'll be a good, visible, easy-to-spot constellation. But either way, Orion is just... And also in terms of the shape, to be honest, Marilyn, it's one of the ones I think, if you look broadly at the belt and the shoulders, and, you know, he's holding a big club above his head and he's fighting the bull, Taurus the bull, it all kind of makes sense in that part of the sky. That little drama plays out rather nicely, because Taurus the bull is just over from Orion the Hunter, and it's also a pretty easy constellation to spot, and it's got some bright stars in it. And so that, come a month or two or three from now, or a couple of hours from now, is a really extraordinary part of the sky to look at.
Okay. Okay. And now tell me a little bit about, because we've been looking largely to our left and straight up. So what's happening to our right from the moon?
Yeah. So if you turn to the right, what you're going to be facing is toward the west.
Okay.
Right? And I hate to say it, but there are some times when certain parts of the sky and certain times of year are relatively uninteresting.
Mm.
So the west right now is, for an astronomy type like me, very interesting because it has a constellation called Hercules. And it's got a very, very beautiful cluster of stars. You have to use a binoculars or telescope to see.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, looking into the west in the fall means I can find this great, what's called the Great Globular Cluster.
Okay.
But for your average person who's not, maybe doesn't have that equipment with them or whatever, it's a pleasant part of the sky to look at, but it doesn't have those bright stars that jump out and catch your attention.
All right.
But if you turn and just keep turning more to the right, though,
mm-hmm.
you're going to face north. So north is an interesting place in the night sky, and I'll tell you what you'll see right now. So tonight, the top object that's going to be very easy to spot if you turned around to the north. So now the moon's at your back.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking to the north, and up high in the sky is going to be Cassiopeia. And it's got five very bright stars that form a, depends on the time of year. It forms like an E or an M or a W.
Mm-hmm.
It rotates around in the night sky and takes on different views for us. So as we look at it tonight, it's more like the number three, let's say. Okay?
Okay.
Imagine that up in the sky. And that is, Cassiopeia is a queen. There's another constellation next to it called Cepheus, who's the king. And their daughter is Andromeda. She's off to the right. But Cassiopeia is, of those three constellations, by far the brightest. So that is a highlight in the fall when you look to the north. And it is high enough up where any viewer shouldn't have any problem spotting it. It's almost straight north. It's a little bit to the right of north. It's you know, two-thirds of the way up the sky, and it's that very, very distinctive shape that tonight looks like the, you know, kind of like the letter E or a three.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But what's really interesting is that constellation, like everything in the northern part of the sky, rather than rising in the east and setting in the west, they move in a big circle around the North Star. So if you can see Cassiopeia right now,
mm-hmm.
and then you were to walk back outside literally in 2 or 3 hours and look up to the north, you're going to see that it will have moved up. But not only will it have moved up, but it'll have curved around a little bit. So instead of being in the shape of an E or the number three, it's going to start to curve around and look more like an M. Can you picture that?
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of guess how that would be if you take that shape and you curve it around? And then if you were to wake up in the morning before sunrise tomorrow morning and look around, it will have moved over to the west part of the sky, and it will look more like a backwards E. You know, it's going to curve across the top of the sky, and then it's going to curve around to the left-hand side of the North Star, and it's going to keep changing how it appears to us. So it is a really spectacular constellation, not just for the five bright stars,
mm-hmm.
but also for that really great pathway, how it changes so dramatically from evening to midnight to the morning. And it just keeps going round and round, because what's nearby Cassiopeia is the North Star. So when you're facing north, of course, you're going to be looking straight up into the sky. Now, one thing I'll point out is that the North Star is not a very bright star. Some people, I think it's just sort of folklore, will say, oh, the North Star must be the brightest star in the sky, isn't it? And I'll say, no, sorry to disappoint, but it's not. It's a really interesting star. And it is all by itself, directly in the north part of the sky. And if you're looking at Cassiopeia, you're going to look kind of down to the lower left of Cassiopeia, and there's a little lonely star there that, in fact, is Polaris. That's our pole star, the North Star. And the fascinating thing about the North Star is it's there where it is right now tonight, And if you come back out in 2 or 3 hours and you look up and you see the Cassiopeia has now moved around, the North Star hasn't moved at all. And if you come back in the morning before the sunrise and Cassiopeia has moved further around, the North Star is still right there. So that's what makes it so special, is that it doesn't go anywhere. It stays put. It is rock solid, spot on in the north, and it stays still while everything else moves around it. And that's why it's so special.
Okay. So if Cassiopeia does this sort of wandering throughout the sky, why didn't the ancients think that Cassiopeia was a planet, or those stars were planets?
Right. Well, yeah, the thing that distinguishes it is that the whole pattern moves as a group, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all of the stars, of course, everything's moving, you know, broadly speaking, from east to west, or as you get closer to the North Star, kind of above the North Star and then below the North Star, you know, they move in this circle. But the grouping is all solid. It's one little grouping of those five stars.
Got it.
And that doesn't change. So that's where you can tell, like, the big difference would be with the planets is that they're moving as little solo bodies against the backdrop of the stars. So that's a big difference.
Okay.
And by the way, now, you know, we just talked about Cassiopeia, how it kind of is going to arch up and then come around. The other side of the North Star, almost like if you were to take the North Star as the pinpoint in the middle,
mm-hmm.
and you put Cassiopeia to the upper right,
mm-hmm.
then way down in the lower left tonight is the Big Dipper, which is one of the most easy-to-spot groupings of stars. Seven bright stars that form a really, really beautiful shape. And that also is in the northern sky, and that also does the same thing as Cassiopeia. Every 24 hours, it just makes a long, gradual, slow journey around around the North Star. So the Big Dipper tonight, as we speak, is low in the sky. It's going to go around its lowest point, which will take it very much on the northern horizon of the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And then later tonight and into the morning hours, it's going to creep around to the right side of the North Star. And by the time it's tomorrow morning, it'll be where Cassiopeia is right now. So they're going to basically trade places. So every 24 hours, they're just going in a great big circle, one around the, you know, both around the North Star, following each other in this grand dance. And some times of the year, in the spring and in the summer, the Big Dipper is much higher up in the sky at night and the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And then this time of year, in the fall and going into the winter, Cassiopeia dominates the northern sky up high. But if you're patient, as I said, if you're patient, then you can see nearly all of this play out every single night. You just have to stay up all night, which is not what everyone wants to do. But it's all out there, and you just have to know that, you know, it's like the seasons. One follows the next. And if you're looking out of the sky tonight, you know, you're seeing the fall sky, the summer sky, and the fall sky. And as those set to the west, what's going to come up in the east? The winter sky, and Orion, and Taurus, the bull, and all these things. Yeah, so they're all in this grand procession that we get to look at every 24 hours. And if you're patient, you can see a lot in a single night.
Interesting. So for people who are interested in really understanding the night sky, because this was fascinating to me, what do you recommend for people who want to delve more deeply into the night sky?
My immediate recommendation is to find your local astronomy club, which, you know, in the San Francisco area is the San Francisco Amateur Astronomers, in the South Bay and the East Bay. There are other clubs. There's one on the peninsula or near Foothill College, the Peninsula Astronomy Club. I come from Los Angeles originally, and there's numerous clubs around there, one based at Griffith Park Observatory. And so whatever medium or large size city you're in, there's going to be at least one or two astronomy clubs.
Mm-hmm.
And at least back in the old pre-COVID days, they would have been hosting a monthly meeting and probably having a star party. And it's just a lot of like-minded people who love them looking into the night sky. And a lot of them will own telescopes and be really good at using them and know how to put them, how to orient them the right way and so on. because my first recommendation, Marilyn, isn't go out and buy a telescope. They're actually pretty hard to use. And I know plenty of people who have bought one, and they use it five times to look at the moon, and then it sits in the closet and gathers dust. And that's not what you want to do. You want to get out and use it. So that's the benefit of being in a club or having these people around you who are big hobbyists and love looking at the sky. And also, by the way, on average, are very nice people. They just want to help you to see the night sky as well. So that is, you know, and if you don't want to join a club, you can simply look up where they have their star parties. And, you know, in the era of COVID, it's going to be less often or maybe even reduced to nothing for now. But hopefully those come back around. And that is, those are typically public events. And you can just show up and talk to people and look up at the sky and look through different telescopes and learn. For me, that's the joy. It can be also, by the way, a great solo hobby. And I know I have plenty of friends in the clubs who just love sitting quietly by themselves in their garden or in a mountaintop with their telescope, and they take in what they get, and they draw. I have a good friend from the astronomy club in San Francisco who's a sketcher. He draws what he sees. It's spectacular. It's beautiful art, in a way. And others who do astrophotography. But you have to kind of decide what's your temperament, what you're looking for, how do you want to experience this, but I think the clubs are the way to go.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Paul Salazar, this has been most illuminating, because normally when I look up in the sky, the most I can find the moon, and I can find the Big Dipper, and I can find Orion when it's there, but I didn't have this information. So now when I look in the sky, I'll be able to recognize a lot more, and that's very exciting for me. So I want to thank you so much for being on the show.
It's my pleasure, and I'm glad you're going to do that. Yeah. No, it's a joy, and really the just keep asking questions and you'll discover answers. By the way, I write a blog. It's called The Urban Astronomer. You can look it up, and there's lots of articles about what you can see in the city, because I focus on city astronomy. And I try to put out tips and highlights and things to look for and to have fun with.
Okay. Well, Paul, stay on the line for a bit. I'm going to just say a word to our listening audience. I hope you all were having a lovely time out there staring at the night sky, contemplating the heavens and having a little peace. Wasn't this better than watching a silly old debate? This was much nicer. And if you want to do a little bit more this Saturday evening, you can visit wonderfest.org for Alone in Milky Way. It's wonderfest.org/alone-in-milky-way. And you can check that out. Want to give a big shout out to the collaborating supporters, the Bay Area Science Festival, the Astronomical Society of the Pacific, the Mount Tam Astronomy, and San Francisco Amateur Astronomers, and last but not least, Wonderfest, for making this all happen. I hope you have enjoyed sharing the night sky with us. Paul, do you want to leave our listening audience with anything?
Yes, I definitely want to say that tonight we had a fun time talking, and hopefully some of you were out there looking. But use this as a starting point and try it again tomorrow night and the next night and see what you can see and see if something about that sky captures your attention and brings you back, because this could be the start of something fun for you.
Awesome. And with that, to my listening audience, I want to thank you so much for tuning in, and we've all shared the night sky. I hope you stay tuned for more music here at KPOO 89.5 FM. Hey, don't forget that KPOO is a listener-sponsored radio station. We're able to do stuff like this because people like you send in money from time to time. And I know times are tough. Times are very tough for just about everybody. So we don't need a lot of your money, even if it's just $1, $5, $10. If you have money to spare, it would be great if you could, you know, send us a little bit. I've been your DJ, Marilyn, and we've been speaking with Paul Salazar. Thank you for sharing the night sky, and I'll see you on Monday.